Hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats, where we're all about packing as much into your expat life as you can. That's what we mean when we say fat. We mean full and overflowing. This expat podcast is listened to in over 160 countries, and we have a Facebook group with over 11,000 members. I'm Kirsty Rice. I'm an Aussie based here in Qatar. And each week I'm joined by Nikki Moffat, who's also an Aussie, but she's over in Hamburg, Germany. Together we have 12 locations between us, which means a lot of new languages on Google Translate and the excitement and possibility of unpacking a full garbage bin that's over 3 months old. How are you, Nikki Moffat?
Fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. I'm recovering from the international fair at school, where the Anzacs teamed up to sell 800 lamb chops to the rest of the world. What about you?
Go, you Anzacs. I'm good. You know, we were talking the other week about my new clean living for the month of November. I'm on day 17 now of no meat, no milk, no sugar, no coffee, no booze. No booze is the biggest one. And what else?
But is there just cheese? Is there cheese?
Of course there's cheese. There is very much cheese though. But while I didn't go the full hog and say no dairy completely, but I'm definitely not drinking those great big lattes. Like I reckon I was downing about 5 lattes a day.
No.
Without fail.
Well, you've quit coffee, so you had to get rid of the milk.
Yeah. So I've got rid of that. But I have had I've had some feta cheese in salad because we do a mean pomegranate, and feta here at our house.
Can I just say something about feta cheese? I love feta cheese. Yes. I've eaten feta cheese as long as I can remember. I like all sorts of feta. There used to be a great restaurant at the Wharf in Sydney, and I used to go and get the Persian feta salad.
I love the Persian
anyway, feta. Yeah. Yesterday or recently in the last week, I was in a supermarket and I was looking for feta cheese and I saw it and it said Schafkäse. And I thought, oh, that's weird. I didn't know feta cheese was made with sheep's milk. I've eaten it for years. It's having to come to Germany, learn another language, and realize that cheese is not made with the milk I thought it was.
Well, my Persian feta faux pas this week is, as you know, in Qatar at this current point of recording, we have some fairly hefty embargoes here and that the Saudis don't like us very much. So when all the embargoes took place, we suddenly started having to find food from other sources. And I haven't, I've obviously thought a lot about it when I've been at the supermarket and seen all the different food that we now get from different places. But one of the things we did get from Saudi that was particularly good was Saudi feta. They had really good feta. So I'd kind of forgotten about that, and we're standing in the busy and packed Qatar market the other day, surrounded by locals and expats alike, and said out loud to the child next to me, my child, "Ooh, let's get some of that Saudi feta," and felt the air around me just
chill.
Stand still, yes. And my son looked at me like, "What are you thinking?" He was like, "Oh, yep, okay." I hadn't really thought about it, that I don't know why it only just clicked. Sometimes these things take a while.
Well, but yes. Like the sheep's milk thing. All right. Today we're going to follow our usual format and break the podcast up into 5 topics, which are, of course,
geographically challenged, which is where we talk about the impact of having lived in more than one place. We'll also cover expat relationships, and that can be anyone you've met in your expat travels.
We also have a quick look at expat tech, where we talk about tech available to expats and how it impacts us, and expat money, where we discuss money issues that are particularly relevant to expats.
And location, 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 where we speak to an expat living somewhere in the world and ask them the 5 fat expat questions. Okay, Nikki, let's start with geographically challenged.
Well, I thought a good topic for this week might be international fairs, being at an international school and having International Fair Day.
Can I ask, how many nationalities do you have at your school?
Well, apparently we have 74 nationalities. I think that's right. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of International Fair Day, you have a flag parade and all the kids from the junior school do a little song, a bit of We Are the World, and then they walk around all the stalls in the fair waving their flags. And they were coming through the section of where we were, and I was looking at them all saying, aren't they cute? And, of course, I was looking for the Australian flag and I found it. And then I saw this very tall kid at the end. My son had been roped in and he was carrying like 7 flags of people that hadn't shown up.
Oh, no.
So he was sort of walking along the back looking very grumpy, but still waving the flags with in time with the music with the little kids.
Oh, dear. Well, I think we've got 76 nationalities at ours, and it goes for a week. Or International Week, and there's one day where there's the food aspect, and then there's another day where there's the ceremonial stuff. Like it goes for, and you wear a certain T-shirt for that week as well.
Well, we have it's the major fundraiser that the PTA does for our school. So we have what they call pre-sales. So in the weeks before the international fair, each country sells something in advance of the fair. The Indians sell samosas and the British sell cupcakes, and there's all these. Every sort of country has a different pre-sale. The Australians and the Anzacs have never had a pre-sale before, but we cobbled together some ideas for some chocolate crackles and sausage rolls for next year. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
But anyway, so International Fair Day, it was quite interesting because not every country does their own thing. So, for example, the Nordic countries all team together so they can have a fairly big stall, and they selling things like jaffles and waffles and all sorts of. I didn't know a jaffle was Nordic, but apparently it is.
Really? This is when people start to get very patriotic about their things that they own, like the Kiwis and the Australians with the pavlova.
Oh, well, that's why we became Anzacs, I think. So we sell New Zealand chops, lamb chops, and we sell Australian wine. So I think that's, you know, it's equal. And we don't try and have a discussion about pavlova or Russell Crowe. We just leave that totally out of it. And so my husband said, oh, I'm off to India to get some lunch. Which was quite fun.
That's very good.
And I myself had my lunch from the Americans. I had a pulled pork roll, which was very, very good. I'm a fan.
Nice one. I'm guessing they also did hot dogs at
The Americans did not have hot dogs this year. I think because hot dogs last year were claimed by another country / area region. Perhaps the Nordics, because it's a big IKEA thing, hot dogs as well. So I'm not sure, but I didn't actually see any hot dogs at all this year. The Americans had macaroni cheese, pulled pork and lollies. I think in order to maximize profit, the simpler you go, the better. When you have the stand the Israelis did a great job. They had falafel, but they also had different salads as well that they were serving. And I thought, I don't know if they're making their money on that.
No,
but it was very good. The Russians had a lot of very serious alcoholic beverages.
Just the alcohol is gold, like that you can do that and that there's not an uprising about there being booze.
Well, it's interesting, right? So we would never have been able to do this in the US, and our international night in America at our school, we used to serve Vegemite sandwiches and fairy bread. I think there was definitely no wine involved. And I put a photo on the Two Fat Expats Instagram page, and a lot of people said the same thing. Oh, you get to have wine. We don't get that. And I said, there wasn't only wine. We were beside the French, so I was having champagne.
Oh, yes. So what did the French do?
The French did quiches, champagne, or sorry, it wasn't champagne. It was Cremant, which is a kind of champagne type drink, and quiches and crepes.
Yeah,
they kept everyone moving. But I tell you, the lamb chops with the super secret marinade recipe by the Anzacs are really one of the highlights of the fair. And they weren't there last year. And so we had people lining up from sort of 11:45, and the fair opens at 12 o'clock all the way through. At the end of the day, people were discounting and sort of selling stuff to get rid of it. We never discounted one single chop. We sold them all at full price.
So I'm gathering you kind of boned the chops so that you could hold them by the bone at the top, so it was more a finger thing. Is that
absolutely
right?
So they're those little chops. There's a photo, Kirstie, on the Instagram page.
I will go have a look.
They don't have the curly tails. They're like a rack. So you cut them up and then you hold the end.
That sounds brilliant. And did everybody stay happy? Was it a United Nations affair where everyone was friends still at the end of the day?
It was. I think it was. And people were very happy to share. And yes, I think everybody was friends and it was a good day.
This leads me to question you, Nikki. Where is the geographical challenge in this story?
Well, the geographical challenge for me was that, for starters, I didn't know jaffles were Nordic food. So there you go. There's always something you learn. I think that's part of it, in that people are interested that certain things come from certain countries and they sort of have a preconceived idea about things from different places, and they're not necessarily the case. So that's what I'm going with.
Yeah. No, I think that's interesting anyway. And I think I like your way of doing it better. When it happens at our school, it isn't a fundraiser. So it's more of a slog of you are providing the food for all the kids to eat. And so it starts with the pre-Ks come over, you know, at 10 o'clock in the morning. And so they shuffle through in this, you know, regimented timetable kind of way. I'm sure there's a special matrix at the school that runs it. But, you know, and then to get through those 2,000 students, you can imagine what the food looks like. Yes, by the end of it, it's a huge affair. And I mean, the kids love it. I'm being the Debbie Downer here, because the kids absolutely love it, because they get to, you know, walk around all the tables and choose their lunch and off they go by doing it. But, you know, when I think about if you had to do, you would never do 800 lamb chops, right? Because that would be, unless you were being very kind to the school and willing to donate.
That's right, profit-making exercise. So we buy the lamb and then we resell them at a price that allows us to make a profit, yeah.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And yours is for the parents as well. So that's fantastic.
You know, it gets us the thing. Different international schools do different things. And, I mean, we weren't at an international school in the US. We were just at a local public school, but we still had an international day. Yeah, so it's really just a thing of how in different countries do international days, international fairs, international weeks in different ways.
And I guess it's fantastic for the international kids, because they can show off their own country to their bestie who's from somewhere else, and their bestie can, you know, reciprocate, but also it creates that conversation, doesn't it, of this is what my family does, or this is what my family eats, or this is what my nonna or my grandma or whatever does. And it just, you know, it's that another part of, you know, the school community. That's great. Messages. We have had a couple this week, but I just wanted to remind everyone that if you wanted to leave us a message here, so that if you had a question or a topic that you'd like raised, please head on over to our website, twofatexpats.com, and click on the microphone and you can leave us a message there.
Perfect. Recently, we also had a message from Carrie from Amman, Jordan, who sent us a message and talked about the business that she's built, which is both local and online. So a local PT, personal training, and an online nutrition business for expats. So that's another example of an enterprising expat online. Well done, Carrie.
Yeah, well done. I love hearing those stories. And we'll have an episode in the future, Nikki, I think, where we talk to different people who've been able to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, so expat relationships. Nikki, I just wanted to talk about something that had come up in the Facebook group, and you and I have talked about this stuff forever, because all expat women tend to talk about this stuff forever. Or no, that's not fair. Maybe they don't at all. Maybe they just don't give a toss. But it seems to be a polarizing topic for those that do care. You and I would have talked about every now and again there will be a post on the Facebook group where someone will refer to themselves either as an expat wife or a trailing spouse. And there will be a flurry of activity where people say, don't say that term, or I can't stand that, or they let it be clear that they don't trail after anyone, or, you know, that they're much more than just a wife. And, you know, of course, there is absolutely no other term for this for men either. Like, there's no men on our page jumping up and down about saying, oh my God, I just went out and someone referred to me as an expat husband again. that doesn't seem to happen. Nikki, so I just thought I would ask you in your expat relationships for this week, what do you call yourself and how do you feel about these two names?
Well, what do I call myself apart from like a frustrated 20-something? I call myself a freelancer. I call myself a slushy. I am very anti the terms trailing spouse and expat wife. I'm a wife. I think that if you are in your home country and you'd never thought about living anywhere else and you take time out of the workforce for different reasons, what do you call yourself then? I really become frustrated by this. And I don't know if it's because I've been here for a long time and I've heard the words trailing spouse for a long time that they make me so frustrated because it's a choice you make as a team. We've talked about this before. You make it as a family or as a partnership, whatever. You don't just, your husband doesn't come home and say, or the wife doesn't come home and say, I'm taking this job overseas. You've got to quit your job. We're all going. That just doesn't happen.
Obviously, I completely agree. Now, I think what's interesting is, not interesting, but about, I don't know, 8 years ago, maybe I wrote a post that went, I guess, viral in the expat world and back in the days when things kind of took off in that way. And I think I may have even called it the expat wife. I can't remember, but I know whatever I called it, I changed it to the expat woman because I had used expat wife in an ironic way, in a, you know, do not call me that. And I don't understand why we're doing that or why we look and talk about expat women like we do. And that, and I guess I can see, I mean, that's the wonderful thing about doing this now for a long time is that I can see that things are changing and they have changed even from when I wrote that 8 years ago, right? Because when I wrote it 8 years ago, there were still very fresh memories of, you know, being at parties where men would say, oh, in my next life, I'm coming back as an expat wife. And there'd be this, you know, of that these expat women that had this easy, you know, easy life traveling around with their working partners, you know, and that it was just a day full of manicures, pedicures and spa trips and, you know, where you just spent endless amounts of money that your husband had earned for you. Do you know, it was this, yeah. So for me, when I hear people say, oh, you know, I'm proudly an expat wife and I'm happy to call myself an expat wife because they say, you know, I'm an expat and I'm married and, you know, that's what I am. I just think maybe we need to consider how that is viewed. I just don't understand why we're not just all expats. Like, what makes it any different? My husband is an expat and I am also an expat. And that's, to me, that's a full stop. There's nothing else that we need to say about it.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. And that's what I say. And I also, when someone says I'm an expat, and we can go down the expat versus immigrant path, but we have a very clear delineation there about what we think. But yes, I agree. And there is nothing. Are you working? No, I'm not. Or yes, I am. In fact, I am. But it's just a yes or no question. It's what you would say if you lived in a country that you'd never left. What do you do? Yeah. Yeah. At the moment, I'm not working. Is it that people feel that, I mean, and I definitely felt this, I have felt this in the past, that you used to be you feel differently because you feel like you've lost, you might feel that you've lost some of your power, some of your, just something about yourself when you're not working and it wasn't, not that it wasn't your choice because it was your choice, but you have moved somewhere and you've made a decision as a family. It's just really hard to explain the feelings that encompasses. But I think trailing spouse, expat wife, yeah, they're out. We should ban them, Kirsty. Ban them.
I think we will ban them. And I think
the banning starts here.
The banning starts here. And I think, you know, maybe a little note on the page as well, because it is polarizing because people do take such offense to it. And I think we just need to stop those labels. In particular, do you know, there are some labels that are incredibly helpful because they may help someone understand something, but there are also some labels that are incredibly limiting. I think expat wife is really limiting, and it's limiting because we all know that we're all much more than just a wife. My husband does not walk around calling himself an expat husband or say that he belongs to a group of expat husbands. You know, we are all just expats, and it's just as simple as that when we're talking about our travels. So yes, I think I might put a little note in the Facebook group about our discussion here today, Nick.
So it doesn't come as a surprise to them.
And I'm sure it will probably spark just another discussion about it. But yeah, I think, you know, maybe if we don't, as in not just you and me, Nikki, as in all of us, as in everybody listening, as in everybody in the group, as in everybody that's taking off on their first adventure or finishing their last, if we all don't put our hands up and say, hey, come on, we're not going to talk about us like that anymore, because things have changed, and many women are the women that lead this expat adventure and take off on the first job, and they have other people that have chosen to come along with them on the ride. No trailers, just all people jointly together making a decision to go off on an adventure. If we just keep it at that, I think you have a much better conversation.
I agree. And I would ask, maybe there are also people that don't start off this way. There are people that start off as a person doing their own thing, living in another country, meeting somebody else, falling in love, getting married. I think they don't start to call themselves Australian spouse.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of perhaps the people that you interviewed in the Expat Boy Meets Expat Girl episode. I'd be interested to hear what Helen has to say about that, for instance.
Oh, God. Helen would never refer to herself as a training spouse, because exactly that. She met her partner, her husband, while she was traveling, and they were working together. And, you know, they've gone on. I don't know if I ever told you, update. If, for those who can remember Expat Boy Meets Expat Girl, Helen and Nigel both met when they were, you know, well within their separate expat adventure together, and then went on to get married, and they've now since had a child, and Helen's now back at work after having the child. And yeah, there is no way that the trailing spouse would fit into her mind at all as a description of who she is or what she's done. And I think, and I understand, because people want to say things like, we came here for my husband's job, do you know, and then they're not quite sure how it goes on to explain what they do. And the thing is, you don't have to really say anything. You're both there as expats. And then someone says, oh, so what do you do? And you can say, well, I'm having a break from whatever at the moment, or I'm a full-time mother of two, or I'm a student, or I'm doing some freelance work, or I'm doing whatever. I think we get so trapped in this meeting people, and you know, so often it comes with the having children, etc. Wherever you are, you may feel that feeling of isolation and loneliness, but yeah, I think we have to make a move to change this.
Yes, so we'll start the movement. Let's go.
Okay. Viva la revolution. That's it. Okay, technically expat.
Oh, Kirsty, I want to know. I want to know. So part of your detox, and let's not get bogged down in the term, but the fact that you're just having some clean living means that you're sleeping, you've got a tech band in the bedroom. How's that working out?
I have. Oh my God, so much. But so yes, so this all started, I don't know how I got so hardcore with this whole cleanse detox thing. And I've been, you know, corrected a couple of times in our Facebook group of, you're not having a detox. Have you seen that? You're not having a detox. Your body isn't.
I've seen that.
Yeah. All right. I just don't want to have to go through the whole spiel of absolutely everything that I am not eating or drinking at the moment. So yes, when I first decided to do this, it was that moment that I think many of us have, where you've gone back and forth and back and forth with a lot of travel, and you've overeaten, because everything in life is a celebration if you're Kirsty. Kind of began with the, I'm a bit sick of myself if I don't do something now in November, this is just going to roll through, you know, both figuratively and literally, but through December, January, you know, February before I get back. So it started, you know, okay, well, I'm not going to have any booze, and then I'm not going to have any. And what came next? I think then came sugar, and then I just kept adding and adding, and then all of a sudden I wasn't having milk, and I wasn't having coffee, and I wasn't having anything. And then I just had this real moment of, because for me too, it was sleep. I noticed I wasn't sleeping very well, so I thought, well, what about if you just cut absolutely everything out, both food and the things that you know you're doing in your life, the habits that are not good for you, cut them all out for a month, and then slowly you can add things and see what it is, like how, what things might be affecting you. So with the digital detox, that came because I realized, you know, I was always either in bed with my laptop out or my phone because, you know, I've got to use my phone as an alarm, whatever. So one of the first things I did was said, no technology past 10 o'clock. So at 10 o'clock, you get into bed with your book and that's it. But my whole thing is I do like in the mornings to read the newspaper. And so then my very clever husband said, well, why don't we buy you a new iPad that just has, you just read the newspaper on and you just use for reading. It's just books and newspapers. So I have to say that has been a big change for me. I did have an iPad before, but I've got one, you know, from 1968. And
actually 2000 was the first year that iPads came in.
That's when mine's from. And so it's very clunky and not fast and whatever. So I did, as a treat, I got a new iPad. And so the phone goes out of the room and the laptop doesn't even come upstairs and the iPad stays with me till 10 and then it goes over on the side bench. And I am sleeping really, really well.
And do you think it's because of the technology or do you think it's because of the eating?
Yeah. Well, this is the thing we'll only work out when we start to introduce things. But I would say it has to be both. You know, there's all those proven studies of screen time before bed and what it does to your sleep and all that sort of stuff. I mean, you've read all this stuff, haven't you, Nikki?
Of course. Often in bed.
Yes. And me too. And I wonder too, does it make you just simply go to bed earlier as well because you have to put it away? Whereas when it's there in your hand, you'll just keep on scrolling through and strolling through until your eyes shut. Do you know? Whereas this is a much more definite, I am now going to bed. This is done. This is rest time.
Yes. And you're sleeping well. And so on that, that's great and it's helping you sleep. But I thought why we would pop it here in the technically expat thing is because really expats are often watching and waiting and across all time zones. So our social media never really shuts down. If you've ever lived somewhere in another time zone, well, your friends will be up. So if it's 2 a.m. and you can't go to sleep, well, I'll just check Facebook or Twitter because I'll know people there.
Yeah. And there'll always be someone awake to talk to you. Yeah.
So I just thought that's – and so the other thing is that when you live far from home or where other people you love are, you're always a bit nervous about turning your phone off or putting it away or – and so how are you feeling about that? Because, you know, you've got two kids in another country. Do you feel
– yeah.
How's that feeling? Do you feel sort of a sense of anxiety when you put your phone outside the bedroom?
No, because I put it outside the bedroom, but I could still hear it if I needed to.
Okay.
Much the same as in the olden days, we all used to hear our house phones. Right. Do you know?
Much the same. And may I ask, is your husband following these same nighttime tech rules?
I have a husband that gets up at, you know, 4:30 to ride his bike.
Yes.
And so my husband could fall asleep standing up at 9 o'clock in the kitchen. It's not hard for him to go to sleep. So he's a real iPad user. And I totally get it now because I have to say, Nikki, I'm becoming a real convert to the whole iPad thing.
Yeah.
It is really, really good. I have not on my iPad, I have not downloaded Facebook or Twitter. So I have Instagram on there, but I really do use it solely for reading newspapers. And I have found I am now reading a shed load more newspaper articles than I used to, because I think when you're in that Facebook mode, you're reading what's coming up in your feed, you know, yes. It's that whole squirrel. And in fact, my husband, who is the most non-royalist person ever, he said to me in the middle, he left to go to Jakarta last night, and as he was leaving to go to the airport, he told me some stupid tidbit about Meghan Markle. And I was like, I said, what were you doing reading an article about Meghan Markle? And this is, of course, for non-royals out there, Prince Harry's new wife. And he said to me, oh, because I bloody read one thing about her and now all I get is royals.
Recommended articles.
But I find putting that away and just having the new, because I have sort of four main newspapers that I subscribe to, and I think if you make sure they're good newspapers like the New York Times, which is always going to give you great news articles and, you know, little interactive things as well, and sort of even great food, you know, the whole thing. And I do a couple, three different Australian newspapers as well. And so I'm finding that the quality of what I'm reading is so much better than probably the guff that I was getting.
Not a lot of newsandguts.com on your feed.
No.
In case you don't want to be quite like Kirsty and put your phone right away, I was listening to a podcast this week about how to sort of get the most out of your mornings. And one of the suggestions was just to put your phone on airplane mode when you go to sleep. So it stops all the bits and bobs and all the automatic messages and the notifications popping up. So when you pick up your phone, there's nothing there. And you can sort of get through what you want to do first thing in the morning, you know, get your kids out of bed, or I don't know about you, but sometimes I get up, I hit my phone alarm, and then all my notifications pop up. I think, oh, I just have a look at this. And then all of a sudden my 12-year-old daughter's yelling at me about, why didn't you wake me up? My alarm didn't go off. So if you don't have any notifications, that will never happen to you. And you can get all the things done that you want first thing, maybe a couple of jobs, go start your exercise, or get dressed to go exercising, one of those things, and all done. So I just thought that was quite a good tool that you could use, and a bit of a tip.
I think that's really, really good for people like you and I, Nikki, who work for people that live in other countries, because I don't know about you, but one of the first things I do is wake up and first thing check the Slack channel of work to check there hasn't been some huge crisis, right, of whether, you know, because my job is in community management, you just don't know what you're going to find, you know, that something happened in the forum, or there was, you know, something on Facebook, or there was a customer service issue, or there was something. So it's this whole thing of, I constantly have to say, you know, this is not your allotted time that you're meant to be working. There's, you know, there is no expectation for you to be doing this, but just stop yourself from doing it. And also it drives your immediate family crazy, because they may even make a snide remark like, I'm not really sure what your working hours are, because I know you've told me they're from 12 till 3, but here we are at 7 a.m. and you're having a conversation with someone at work. Yeah, like you said, airplane mode is perfect, because it's the thing that's going to stop you from that temptation.
Let's do that, maybe.
So, Nikki, expat money, I don't have a big one to talk about this week, but something that did come up that I wanted to think of. You know, I have been on this real money mission over the last 12 months to sort of get more control over my money and be a bit more responsible in my marriage of, you know, both of us being involved, because, you know, I've talked a lot before about how much I had my husband sort of bore the brunt of doing our finances. But I realized it is something that you have to continually remind yourself, because even this week I found myself with, I don't have a bank that we use for our home loan in Australia has an app, and my children bank with that bank. And just this week something came up where someone needed, you know, they live off, the two girls live off a budget for the term, so they get given an amount of money at the beginning of the term and then that's it. But, you know, someone needed some money for driving lessons and something else. And I was like, oh, shoot, I don't have that app. You know, I'm going to have to phone my husband and say, can you transfer da-da-da into da-da-da? It was just one of those minutes where I thought, Kirsty, you should be in control of this. Do you know, this is something you need to have as well, but you've let it slide. So I guess it was just that little aha moment of just showed me that while I've been so, you know, virtuous about getting on top of the money more, and we definitely are having much better money conversations. And, you know, the other day I came home with a whole lot of mail from Australia, and we went through and we kind of looked again at, well, what is our interest rate and how would we make that better and how would we do this? And we went through every different bill, and I feel like I'm so much more aware and conscious of our money situation. And then something like that happens where you go, no, you're not really in control. You need to do better. So I'm still getting there. I'm a work in progress, Nikki.
But the question is, did you get the app?
Not yet, because it only happened yesterday. I haven't done it yet because my husband's in Jakarta. And this is why, probably why it came to my attention as well, because my husband's in Jakarta and this needs to happen. And I've had to send him a note to say, hey, can you do this for this much and send it to blah, instead of me just being able to fix it.
Yes, good point.
All right, Nikki, tell me, I haven't listened to Location, Location, Location as yet. You're going to have to tell me about it while I quickly go into our Slack channel and search it up.
Okay, so this week we're up to P, and P is for a person with a little pink suitcase. Kirsty, if I told you that, would you know where we were going to?
Yes, so I'm thinking you're going to Paris because I think you're talking about Ingrid, who has the most gorgeous little icon on her Facebook and everything else with a little pink suitcase. Is that who you're talking about?
That's exactly right. Now, some time ago when I went to Paris with my family on a holiday, I met some fatties in Paris and we had coffee, and Ingrid was one of them. And at the time you said, I'm so cross because I've been talking with her online for years and you get the opportunity to have coffee with her. So now I had the opportunity to talk with her and learn about Paris through her eyes. Also ask her the five fat questions, which of course started with, on a scale of 1 to 10, how in love she was with Paris.
Ooh, let's say 7.
7. And is that up or down on 12 months ago?
Probably a bit down of 12 months ago.
Okay. What's your best local find? You might have a few, so feel free to offer them.
Oh, where to start? Well, of course, the Café Carrette, where we went to have a coffee together.
Yes.
One of Parisian's oldest cafes. And the area in Paris called Le Marais is very popular now. Lots of boutiques, lots of little cafes, restaurants. What else? The 10th arrondissement, which is out on the east side of Paris, is also becoming more and more popular with the young people. So there's lots of bars, lots of concert halls, lots of events going on out there. Yeah, but gosh, I mean, Paris is a very big city. There's lots yes. going on. There's always new things opening up. Basically, you want to try everything, anything new, you know, any exhibition that's new, a restaurant that's opened up, a bar that's been inaugurated. Those are the places to be.
And where you live in town, right? So in the city.
In the city, right 200 meters from the Eiffel Tower. So that's really nice, mainly because the school's right below the Eiffel Tower. So it was a strategic choice being halfway between the school and my husband's work, right. Which is where I usually try and live wherever we go, because yes. it makes life so much easier and all the logistics that go with it.
Absolutely. What drives you crazy about Paris?
The traffic.
It's such a common response.
Sorry, I'll correct myself. Not so much the traffic. It's the Parisian attitude to driving. probably is more like it.
Someone told me after we went there and had gone around the Arc de Triomphe on the massive roundabout with the 100 lanes, that if you have an accident, it doesn't matter if it's not your fault, you go 50-50 on whatever happens in the accident.
That's true. Absolutely, that's true. And it's one of my favourite roundabouts, I must say. I've driven in South America. I've driven in Italy. So we sat in the car when we first moved to Paris. I put the kids in the car and we lived quite near that area, that roundabout. And I said, kids, hold on. And here we go. Yeehaw. And we went for it. And it's great. Just the faster you go, the better. Everybody gets out of your way.
Okay. Where's one place you'd love to live?
I would love to live in Sydney, actually. I have never been to Australia, but it is a place that has fascinated me. I've heard many good things about it. I realize it's very far away, especially for somebody who's spent most of their life in Europe. But I would love to spend a couple of years down under.
And what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given about your expat life or living this way of life?
Embrace it, I guess. It's you move out of your comfort zone, but that's not the whole point, but making the most of moving around. In order to make the most of it, you need to embrace change. And change is good. That's actually a quote from my mum. Change is good. And I've come to decide that, yeah, it is. It's not easy, but it's usually for the better. And you grow. In any case, you will grow. Your family will grow. So that's the best piece of advice. Go out there. Don't be afraid. Try new things. Explore and be brave. Be bold. Be brave.
And I guess this ties in, and I've never realized this before, and I've asked 14 people the same questions, but it's a similar thing. What's the biggest lesson you've learned?
The biggest lesson is you have to be patient and understanding. It's very easy just to say, oh, well, I don't like a place because, or I don't like a people because they have this and that and the other. You have to try and understand their point of view and see where they're coming from and be more patient with them and be more open-minded and more flexible. Not always easy. You know, it's easier to say than to do, especially when you're sitting in traffic in Paris.
It's also hard because when you first move to a new country, you sometimes think, oh, this is driving me crazy because it's not the same as it was before. And then afterwards, when you're more open-minded, you're more likely to generalize about something. Or I say, oh, yeah. all the Germans are grumpy. Yes, or that kind of thing. So you're right. I mean, I always say one of the things I've got from living overseas is to have an open mind. But then when I hear myself talk sometimes, I think, oh, I'm kidding myself if I think that's what it is.
Yeah, but it's an adventure. I think you have to see it as an adventure, as an opportunity. I'm a firm believer that either you do it once or twice and either you'll never do it again, meaning moving around with a family and starting all over again, or else you're hooked and you just go on forever and ever and ever. I mean, we've been here now for 7 years and I'm just waiting for the day when my husband comes home and says, honey, you know what? I think, and so I'm still waiting.
Still waiting. And the other
One other thing that sprang to mind, actually, and I quote on Kirsty on this a lot, is that because you asked me what stuck with me, and it's the trailblazing. Everybody keeps on talking about trailing spouse, and I keep on referring to trailblazing spouse.
So I'm not telling Kirsty that I'm interviewing you, which it's exciting because she was so cross when I had coffee with you. She's like, I can't believe I've been talking to her online for years and you got to do it. So how did you first, did you both have blogs? Is that how you first started being friendly online?
I was stuck in Switzerland in a little place and I got rather bored. And so somebody talked to me about blogging. This was 9 years ago. And I thought, oh, this sounds interesting. So I went online and one of the first expat blogs that I came across was Kirsty's. And it was her post, The Expat Woman, from 2010 or something.
Right.
So it really, really, really hit home. And I'm like, wow, this is it. You know, I love this woman and I love what she's writing. And so she inspired me. A lot of her writing was, I'm not a writer. I'm not a journalist, but I started a little blog in Lugano and then I've got one in Paris. Enjoying my writing, enjoying taking pictures and publishing them.
Well, you kept that a good secret, didn't you?
I kept a secret, but how weird is it? All these things sort of come together. No. You just talked about that blog post today.
I just thought, oh my God, this is going to look so staged that I just mentioned that 20 minutes ago or so. That is kind of freaky, isn't it? That it all did come together.
It is, but it happens every week. We usually there's some sort of overarching thing that we don't.
Yeah.
Some higher power.
Yeah.
Bringing it all together.
Yes. And oh, that was lovely. That really put a smile on my face. That's lovely. Okay, Nikki, what have you been reading?
Well, I've been reading Becoming by Michelle Obama.
Yes. How beautiful is the cover of that book?
It's so beautiful. The portrait is just absolutely stunning. Yeah. As you know, I love US politics. I've been in love for a long time with US politics. And when Living History came out, which was Hillary Clinton's book after she was first lady in the early 2000s, it was my favorite book for ages. I just loved it. And so as soon as I saw that Becoming was coming out, I got it. I am listening to it on Audible and she reads it, which is great. And I am just really loving it. I'm about halfway through because of all the back and forth I had to do with the school last week. I had a lot of car trips that I could listen to it in. And I'm just really, really enjoying it. And if you just, it's quite incredible to see. You know, obviously, I haven't heard the whole story about. I'm just in the campaign at the moment, the presidential campaign. But where she came from, the absolute massive sacrifices her parents made, and she went to Princeton and Harvard, and it's so incredible to think about those the huge leap between where she came from and you know what she's doing now, but also that she's very real. She talks about sort of very real in it, and you know they talk about she and her husband had marriage counseling. You know, they had IVF, you know, all the sort of regular couple stuff. So she used to believe him when he said he was on his way home and used to keep the kids up to kiss goodnight and everything and then be sort of hours after their bedtime. And then she went through a stage where she realized that, you know, she had to just set the timetable and say, this is our timetable, we're sticking to it. And if you're not here, you don't get to see them. But that's, you know, what we all do. That's everyday life for all people. It's very straightforward. And of course, when people write a book, it's their own point of view, but it just seems all so very real. And I'm just really enjoying it.
And had they had the marriage counselling, did they do that sort of early in their marriage, or are we talking White House counselling or something?
No, it was around when they had little kids. So it was about, because he was a commuter. He was, you know, like a lot of our husbands, he was away a lot of the week because they lived in Chicago and he was in the state government, which was in another city. Right. And he traveled sort of Monday to Thursday and, you know, was having trouble fitting into their lives. And they're also very different people. So she's a planner and an organizer. So she likes things to be ordered. She likes things to be tidied and put away. And he's very sort of loose. Like he has books stacked everywhere and doesn't have put papers away, and sort of they're opposite people. And when opposite people live together, those kind of issues come up. So Kirsty, I'm loving that. I'm loving reading that. What are you reading?
I put a couple of New York Times articles in here today because both kind of really struck me. One was called Puberty for the Middle-Aged, and it kind of worked on the theory of that we really need to have the same, you know, when you get the talk for puberty when you're young and people sit you down and give you the talk, that someone really needs to sit down and give you the talk for middle age. And it was very clever, and it was kind of, you know, focused around perimenopause, which I don't know about you, Nikki. I don't know whether it's my age or whether I just find there are so many more conversations about perimenopause at the moment. Like it seems like it comes up in conversation online, and a lot more people. It's not the taboo sort of topic. And I don't think perimenopause was talked about when I was young. It was always just menopause. Oh, you know.
Yes. So this is something I've come to realize very recently, that perimenopause is the whole thing and menopause is just one day. It's just one day of your life.
Yes. When it
And I never actually knew that. Menopause is the day that you have been period free for 12 months. That is the day you achieve menopause, achievement unlocked. Everything in the lead up is part of this magical mystery tour called perimenopause.
And do you think people say perimenopause because that they like it more than menopause? It means, well, I'm not quite dead yet. I'm still going.
I don't know why people say it, but I was thinking about this when you talked about sort of aging, when it talks about aging. So perimenopause, and you think about, I think about when my mother was I felt she was going through it. I thought she was so old. And I think, gosh, you know, I'm similar age or getting towards that same age now, and I don't feel old at all, hence my frustrated
well
20 something.
The majority of people I see writing about it and talking about, even Gwyneth Paltrow is talking about perimenopause now, do you know? So it's become
if it's on Goop, then it must be good. But interestingly enough, so Gwyneth is how old? 45 maybe? I'm not sure. Julia Roberts, how old do you think Julia Roberts is?
Probably close to 50.
51. Yeah. Sandra Bullock, 54.
Yeah.
Nicole Kidman, 51. Yeah. Okay, so these are all actresses that we grew up with. Let me tell you this. Do you remember the series The Golden Girls?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember Blanche Devereaux, who was played by Rue McClellan? Yeah, she was 51 when she started doing that show.
No!
Yes. So think about the difference between what she looked like on that show, how they portrayed a 51-year-old, and what Julia Roberts looks like now.
Wow.
That is crazy. And that was in 1985 that series came out.
Thinking that yesterday, I saw a picture of Liz Hurley, and she looked like Liz Hurley looked 20 years ago, you know, the same. And she was in a bikini. Her body looked the same. That was what was freaky. You look at Cindy Crawford and the same thing, and then you go, and then they'll say, I'm 54. This article was a little bit more realistic about what happens, you know, to your arms and how no matter how many times you go to the gym, you know, that skin underneath your arms is just not going to bounce back. And it sort of said that someone needs to, that when we're having the talk, that these things should get explained to us.
Yeah, the doctor should sit us down or... Is it up to our parents to sit us down? I mean, who should be sitting us down and telling us about
Definitely
Perry?
Definitely not our husbands.
Women get all the great things, don't they? I mean, really? Seriously.
Now, the other thing I'm reading is called This Is 18 Around the World, and I will, again, attach both of these links to our running sheet. And I just thought it was a great piece of multimedia in that it's completely interactive, but it was really interesting. So they have a vast amount of young 18-year-old women. And it's got Shenzi from China, and they're asking her, you know, what's something you'd like to learn? She says, I want to learn Taekwondo because it's really cool. What's a place you've never been to but would like to go? She says, Russia. I've always thought Russia is a mysterious country, so I've always wanted to go. Who do you go to for advice? She says, I usually solve problems on my own, but if I can't really solve something, I go to my peers or to a trusted elder. What's your favorite quote? She says, sorry, I can't think of a quote when there's a bowl of spiced corned pig hooves in front of me. There was Victory from Nigeria. When did you first feel like a grown up? When I first felt like an adult, when I went to the market with my mum and got everything she wanted, it made me feel grown to bargain with the sellers and get the best prices. I just kept reading the stories of these young women thinking how differently we all grow up. I mean, when she said, I felt like an adult when I went to the market and got everything she wanted, I thought she was going to say everything I wanted. I really liked that they also had their playlists and what they were listening to. They asked them how they felt about their mums. They were all like really good questions. And then there would be one that would just strike you, where you'd be getting all caught up in the happiness of it all. And then there'd be, you know, Sharma from Bangladesh, who said, once a girl is married, she can't do anything without the permission of her family. If there's anything I want to do, I have to ask my husband first. You know, and you just looked at this little 18-year-old face, thought, wow. But then Liana from Iran told us she had 20,000 selfies. So...
Liana's got a bit of spare time off her sleeve.
Nikki, What are you watching?
Well, I watched Oprah interview Michelle Obama on Oprah Super Soul, which I just stumbled across on Facebook. So, yeah, I guess it's one of their Facebook TV things. Oprah interviewed Michelle, and she said, Oprah said, she chose the book for her book club, but she wants all the book clubs to do the book at the same time. She said, I want Reese to do it. I want all these people to do it. She said, because she thinks everybody should be reading the book. And I thought that was quite interesting that she was so forceful and positive about it. And she just watching them, it was just like two old friends having a chat, which was very nice to watch. And the room was actually, it was, obviously, they had chosen the audience, and there was a lot of young girls from a local high school. So they spoke a lot in terms of that. In fact, one of the things Michelle Obama said was that she'd been speaking to a young person recently. I guess that's another lady in her 50s who you wouldn't, is a little bit ageless, and said, you know, if you're going to be married for 50 years and 20 of them are bad, then that's a pretty good marriage. The person kind of looked at her and she said, but that means you had 30 years of amazing marriage and relationships, because they were sort of talking about how relationships are hard and they're tough and, you know, you need to work at them. They don't just happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really enjoyed that Oprah interview. The other thing I've been watching, Kirsty, is Homecoming, the podcast.
Yeah. But I haven't played it. Is it good?
Yes. Well, it's on Amazon Prime. And you remember recently we were talking about Amazon Prime. Yeah. I've only watched one episode because I kept seeing it. I thought, oh, I really have to watch it. So Julia Roberts plays the role that Catherine Keener had in the podcast. And she's good, but she wears some bad wigs. And it's quite difficult to look at her because it just looks like a wig. And it put me off a little bit, but I am quite enjoying it. And one interesting thing about the series, which I'm sure will develop over time, is that they show, so in the podcast, you know, they have different time frames. So they have the current time and then they have the past time. And then the mystery is, if we can hear her speaking to this one person all the time, but she says to this guy in the present time, she doesn't know him, how does that happen? And so, but in the TV show, what they do is they show it in different screen sizes. So current day is in a wide screen. No, current day is in a square screen, and olden days, sort of the period, the time that they're, the backstory is in a wide screen. So you don't have to worry about different hairstyles or moustache, no moustache, all that kind of stuff. It's quite obvious by just the visual of looking at the screen, which I thought was quite interesting. I don't think I've ever seen that done.
I wonder why they didn't use the same actress.
I think because Julia Roberts bought the option. She was involved in that. So none of the same actors are in it. There's no David Trimmer. There's no anyone. So it's a whole different set of actors. But I think I'm going to enjoy it. What about you? What are you watching?
I am watching Draft Day. I watch. Now, I watch this because, you know, I've talked often about my fascination with the AFL draft, which is the Australian Rules Football Draft, and it is draft day for us on Thursday. And Australia is really working on trying to build their draft day into something very similar to what happens in America. And it's been really interesting because the draft used to be nothing in Australia, right? It wasn't televised. Yep. It wasn't talked about. You just, you know, you sort of read bits and pieces here. And then over sort of the last few years, it is just slowly getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And I had heard on a podcast, someone said, if you want to understand draft day, go and watch a movie with Kevin Costner and Jennifer Garner called Draft Day, which is set in the States and it's set around the NFL. And I was thinking, oh, it's going to be terrible because Dan, Kevin Costner, you know, it was bloody fantastic. I loved it because it made, you know, it's such a, they're like traders, do you know? And if you enjoy reading or hearing about any sort of business trading deal or any sort of transaction where things get bargained or bartered, and it really is kind of on the edge of your seat. Well, how does this work? Do I know everything I'm meant to know? What could be hiding? And people having to work together to do deals. I thought it was really, really good. There was only one thing I really didn't like about it, and that was Kevin Costner was so much older than Jennifer Garner And they play a love interest in that they don't just work together, they're sleeping with each other. And I don't think they needed to have it that they were sleeping together. I don't think that needed to be there at all. The thing is, I almost think the movie producers were onto it, that it looked weird too, because they have one kiss and it's right at the end of the movie and it's the last scene. And both, you know, I watched it with my husband, and both of us, when they kissed, we both went, he's too old for her. Like, he's just too old for her. I just thought it was unnecessary. I think the movie must have been in about 2014, because they work on the 2014 draft. But yeah, I just thought that bit was a bit unusual. But for the actual content of how a draft works and why it is so exciting, I guess the other thing, it just confirmed for me, because there's been this thought going on in my mind all week, you know, because, you know, if you are an AFL fan and it's something you're into and you're into your team and you want to see who you're going to get, there is this constant conversation of, but it means nothing because, you know, for the NFL in America, Tom Brady was 199 in the draft, you know, so it wasn't relevant for how his career turned out. And we have the same thing in Australia where, you know, our best player in my team was number 55 in the draft pick. But even though we all know that and we all have that logic, the hype still comes.
Yeah, that's the hype, right? So I have watched the NFL draft live over two nights. When we lived in the States, my husband's totally into it. But I watch it for the best names because it has unbelievable names. Some of those players have amazing names. So at the end of the night, we would evaluate, and my husband was, I'd say, "What? Who did you think was the best pick?" And he'd say, "Who did you think was the best name?" And we'd do it that way. But he loves it. He is obsessed with NFL, always has been, even before we lived in the States. And I have watched the draft live, and you even know who they're going to pick because, you know, all the deals have pretty much been made in advance. But people still get excited about it. It's crazy.
We don't know who they're going to pick. And I definitely think in this movie, how it was depicted in draft day, they didn't know who they were going to pick. You could kind of go,
that's right,
they need or whatever. Like we, and I would say with the AFL draft, like I know that my team needs a running, you know, a midfield player, but it doesn't mean that's who they're going to pick. And I think that's what gets you in, is it's like,
well, that's right. And I guess in the US, they all come from the college system, which is massively publicized. Yeah. So people know who's been visiting what teams, who's been watching what tapes. And there's podcast and report after report and radio show after radio show about who's got what pick and who they will probably pick. So when I say they know who they're going to pick, that you don't 100% know, but it's 90% there.
Oh, wow. I would say that is where Australia has got to, because now we have all for the last month, you know, when I went off, football was over. Oh, no, because now we're going to talk all about this. So I can tell you about all these boys, even though they've all only, you know, played in leagues nowhere near where I live and nowhere near being televised. I have watched all the interviews and I've heard who they barracked for as a child and who's been to their house. And pretty much everybody goes to everybody's house from what I can work out. And I've heard all the ridiculous questions they get asked, you know, like if your favourite sandwich got thrown into the bin, would you pull it out and eat it?
Oh, yeah. Yes. How many shoes are there in China? That kind of thing.
Anyway, so I watched it and I thought it's definitely one you could watch with your kids as well. And so I'm always up for recommending movies like that because it's so hard to find things to watch with your kids. And, Nikki, I only had one last thing that I had listened to. And I just wanted to talk about Carolyn Wilson. You know that my love for Carolyn Wilson knows no bounds. Carolyn Wilson is, of course, Caro on Don't Shoot the Messenger, and I have followed her career for a long time and just absolutely really, really respect and admire her work. But she did the Andrew Olley lecture in Sydney. Well, I guess it's probably about a month ago now. But I will include a link to it for other people if they're interested, if they want to go to our twofatexpats.com. It will be on there. But I really, really enjoyed her talk. Did you listen to it, Nikki?
I did, Kirsty, because I also have a great respect for Carolyn Wilson. My love is probably not right up where yours is. I haven't followed her for years and years, though she's somewhat new to me. But I did enjoy, and I enjoyed listening to the recent podcast where Annabelle Crabb, where there's a crossover podcast, yeah, where Annabelle Crabb from Chat 10 Looks 3 was on the Don't Shoot the Messenger podcast, and they did talk about Caroline's Andrew Oliver.
Yes, yeah. And I just think she's done a brilliant job for women in that field, and I think she's really supported. But I also don't the thing I do really like about her too is she's still not all rainbows and unicorns about women coming into the field. Like, she will say, work hard, and, you know, I'm not coping with that bullshit. And, you know, she's tough and she's hard, and I really, really respect her work. But, yeah, well worth listening to if you're interested in hearing a bit about the background and then how she got into the field of work that she got into, which was very male-dominated. But also she talks about I think the thing that I loved about it the most is, for a long time, you know, I have seen her be – if you were going to be really fierce, you'd call it bullying. And if you weren't going to be fierce, you'd maybe say people mocking her. And I think she's always handled it with pure class. But I think in this particular lecture, she actually addressed it really well. And I think she had a bit back and said what it did to her. And she was able to say, you know, that she was humiliated by a lot of it. And I just thought it was a really, really important speech that she made.
Yes, I agree. And it made me sort of go back and have a look at for some other Andrew Olley lectures I might like to look at. So they've got a little file there of things I might go and look at.
Lisa Wilkinson did a good one. I remember watching that too.
All right, I think we're done, Kirsty. I think we're wrapped up for the week. But before we go, we'd like to say, if you enjoy this podcast and you're still listening, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love you to leave us a review or a rating in iTunes or whatever podcast app that you use. This is how people find us, and it really does help get our message out about the podcast.
Great. Okay, see you next week, Nikki. All right. Okay. Ready to roll?
Ready to roll.